Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to our weekly podcast, My Wife Hates Video Games. I'm your not-so-humble host, Travis Bone, more affectionately known as Finally He Sleeps Across the Interwebs. I'm a Gen X video game addict, beer enthusiast, and pop culture fanboy. Each week we'll talk books, movies, sci-fi, gaming, comics, soccer, whatever. And yeah, I said soccer. I'm coming to you from the middle of a cornfield in Ohio, USA, where we call it soccer because we're idiots. There's a fair portion of each show dedicated to FIFA Mobile, my favorite video game, with enough info to help you navigate the current season and take your own team to the next level, so make sure you stick around for that. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let's get down to business and talk pop. All right, where to begin? Instead of jumping right into FIFA Mobile this week, let's try something different and hit everything else first and then end with my favorite video game. I have a list of topics I want to tackle, so let's dive right in. Anyone who knows me in real life knows I've been a diehard SNL, Saturday Night Live, fanatic since, hell, I was probably 5 or 6 years old when my mom first let me stay up late enough to watch it with her. That first year, I was so young. I mean, I really probably didn't understand anything. The only thing I do remember is how much I loved Jane Curtin, Bill Murray, Lorraine Newman. Gilda Radner was hysterical. Her Roseanne Dana voice was a character that I perpetuated to make my mom laugh all the way until I was in high school. I continued to watch the show even though it was never really as good as it was when I was that young. Even through the Joe Piscopo years, and if you have no idea who Joe Piscopo is, then you're better off than I am. I mean, I stuck with it through the non-Lorne Michael years when the show just literally sucked. I was just as excited to be up that late enjoying the laughs with my mom as I was actually watching the show. It was much better in the 90s, although most people bitched about the cast at the time. That's the Saturday Night Live that most people now consider the classic era. That was where you had Chris Farley, Sandler, Spade, Chris Rock, Dana Carvey, that group. That was the mid-90s. But, you know, thinking back on it now, I remember Robert Downey Jr. was on there. Sarah Silverman was there for about a year. A couple of short-lived cast members that seem really weird now. Anyway, huge SNL fan, have been my whole life. But ever since Kate McKinnon entered the cast, I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago, she's become not only my favorite female comedian, but she's also my celebrity hall pass. I really, really hope we'll look back at her time on Saturday Night Live 15 years from now, so let's say like 2035 if we still have a planet, and we'll think of her now, 2015 to 2020, as special as we people my age think back on the comedic genius that was Gilda Radner back in her days in the 1980s. Justin just asked in live chat what the hell a celebrity hall pass is. Okay. A celebrity hall pass is the one famous person that you could get away being unfaithful with because you've discussed it previously with your spouse. You're basically your one hall pass. It boils down. It's your celebrity crush. It's the one famous person that if you ran into him at the grocery store, you could bang the shit out of him and nobody would complain about it. Now, it's funny that my original crush was Ellen DeGeneres. Like old Ellen DeGeneres, stand-up comedian Ellen DeGeneres, not the QVC spokesman that sells underwear that we have now. In the 80s, there was just something about her that resonated with me. I mean, it was obvious that she was gay, but that boring and kind of chill delivery in her stand-up just did it for me. Don't judge. It's just what it is. I mean, I could overlook her bowl haircut and butch cut jeans just because of how much I enjoyed her stand-up. Now, it's changed over the years a couple of times, like my celebrity hall pass, but it's settled on Kate McKinnon for the last 5-6 years. And yes, I realize she is also gay. Fuck it, I don't care. The woman is a comedic goddess, and yes, I must watch the SNL opening credits each and every week just for those 3 seconds of that Kate McKinnon profile. If you know what I'm talking about, you're probably best friends with me right now. But if not, just ignore the fact that I'm apparently obsessed with lesbian comedians. And let's just move on. Good God, I'm rambling way off topic. Anyway, Kate McKinnon and her younger sister, Emily Lynn, have a 10-episode audio series out called Heads Will Roll that I've been binging all week long. It's a medieval comedy about evil Queen Mo, she's Queen Mo, voiced by Kate McKinnon, and her loyal minion and best friend Jojo, who is a cursed princess living her life as a raven. Yes, she's like a tiny bird. Now, as much as I love Kate McKinnon, her younger sister nearly steals the entire audio show throughout as Jojo. Queen Mo is really trying to be an evil queen, but her heart's just not into it. Jojo is the real brains, and she's the intelligence behind everything, but being trapped in the body of a raven is really putting a hurting on her love life, and she's constantly bringing up the fact that her pussy is also her ass. So, I mean, there's lots and lots of beheadings. They murder children, obviously some bestiality. There's a set of bards in their 70s who are constantly bragging about how destroyed their hymens are. And a full complement of voice actors making cameos. Everyone from the current cast of Saturday Night Live to big names like Tim Gunn and Meryl Streep. If you haven't heard of Heads Will Roll, you've got to check it out. I'll make sure I put a link to the in the description of the podcast. The show is raunchy, it's hilarious, and entirely fucked up. It's exactly everything I love. Plus, it's Kate McKinnon at her best, and her younger sister, who, because of this week in binging this show, is now obviously my second favorite female comedian. Okay, the 20th of December marks the release of The Rise of Skywalker, and I'm counting down the days. I do not have tickets secured, mostly because I don't know what my schedule is going to look like, and I'm still trying to talk my whole family into going with me, not just my 14-year-old son and 8-year-old daughter. I don't really know if it's a good idea to make it a family outing, though. I mean, last week I talked about how emotionally invested into the universe of Star Wars I am, and The Rise of Skywalker will mark the end of a lifelong saga for me. I'm going to be an emotional mess watching this movie, and you can laugh all you want, but when I sit down to watch a movie, I unlock the door and give myself over completely to the entire experience. I tune out the rest of the world and just dive in head first with my entire body. That complete emotional freedom often results in me forgetting my surroundings and ultimately being ridiculed for leaving my man card at home. Let's see. When Dobby died in the Deathly Hallows, it was like a shot to my heart. Again, I'm going off the rails, but I can't remember if I teared up actually reading the book or not, but when the movie version came out afterward and I actually saw it on the big screen, I completely lost it. Now, it was opening day for the film, and my son, who I pulled out of school to go see it, was just as moved as I was. I think he was probably about 9 years old at the time. You can get away with it. Everyone was that emotional. The sold-out audience was all sobs, whimpers. There's just blowing noses for the next 3 minutes. Me losing it in that movie at that moment was okay. It was expected. Now, The Rise of Skywalker is going to be different. I have a feeling I'll be crying through the whole fucking thing. Not whimpers and sobbing, but just like the occasional tear rolling down my cheek from that initial horn blast that marks the start of all Star Wars movies till the very last roll of the credits. Say what you want, but I'm fine with it. Star Wars is as close to religion as I'll probably ever come to anything in my lifetime. My wife and kids, they're not going to agree. And if they all go and it does go the way I fear it will, they'll be giving me shit for years. Which, knowing ahead of time, makes it less enjoyable experience for me. I mean, that's kind of the fear. I'll be distracted by them watching me to see if I'm crying yet. And as much as I can't wait to see it, I may wait and just watch it by myself after Christmas before going with everyone just so I can enjoy it undistracted. But then again, I'd have to avoid spoilers for however long that takes. I mean, it's only the films, though, that have that kind of effect on me. The Mandalorian does nothing. I mean, I love it. It's a great show, but it's just a show. I can't explain it. Maybe if I were watching it in a big theater, it would be different. But then again, I saw Solo in a big theater, and that was just a Star Wars movie to me. I loved it, but it didn't grab a hold of me the way the rest of the 10-film series does. Live chat. Okay, Reese just asked, 10-film series. What are the 10 films? Okay, now I say 10 films because I do include Rogue One, but I do not include Solo. It's just my humble opinion. And the reason being is Rogue One is actually part of the story. Solo is a side story. You don't have to see Solo to understand the entire canon of that 9-film series, 10 with Rogue One, because to me that is a Star Wars story that fits within that scope. We've talked in detail about how much my daughter loves Baby Yoda, speaking of The Mandalorian. You'd think as intelligent and money-hungry as Disney is, they would have foreseen this massive marketing, you know, the memes and everything about how cute that goddamn Baby Yoda is, that they would have had something out ready for release this time of year to cash in on it for Christmas, but apparently not. The only place to get a Baby Yoda stuffed animal right now is on Etsy, which means they're handmade, and despite how much some people love Etsy, I assume everything on there contains trace amounts of semen or at the very least some blood and hair in the animal. Okay, the internet is just a very strange place, and Etsy is just not my cup of tea. Years ago, like before the turn of the century, which sounds really weird when you put it that way, despite the fact that for me it's 100% true, I was involved heavily in a shady little thing called Get Offended, which started out as a joke when we were in college, but quickly grew large enough that it became a full-time job for a handful of my best and most trusted friends. We designed and sold humorous, and okay, I say humorous, but they were more offensive than funny, which is kind of its own sort of humor. So, yeah, I mean, we designed and sold humorous t-shirts, posters, bumper stickers and stuff, but it was really just offensive stuff. That's how it started. Then we moved into sponsorships. At first, it was a bowling team, like an actual bowling team came to us and asked if we could just make them shirts. Then a softball team. All small-time stuff. People just found us on the internet and sent us an email asking for custom stuff, which we made for them for free just because, you know, we found it hilarious. It sort of snowballed from there, and soon we were dressing professional wrestlers and producing local bands. We even scored a couple of executive producer credits on indie films. No idea where I was going with this. Oh, okay, during the tenure of my time with Get Offended, there was a short-lived website called naughtybids.com. I remember where I was going now. Okay, I got it. Okay, Etsy, Naughty Bids. Okay, Naughty Bids was Etsy, eBay, and like Pornhub all rolled into one. This was obviously before Pornhub. You could post your own personal listings on there for auction. So imagine a more depraved version of Craigslist. It was a membership-only site that required a credit card on file to even gain access to any of the listings. We had an account at Get Offended. I mean, we wrote it off as a business expense, but it really just consumed our lunch hour every day reading the listings. I mean, we never bought anything. We sold stuff on there, but we never bought anything. It was literally the worst of the worst as far as the internet was concerned in the mid to late 90s. More than half of it was like pre-worn clothes in various states of grossness. There was an entire section of Sweaty's tube socks. I shit you not. the more fetishy it was, the more we laughed. There was incredibly attractive Californian college beach bunnies that would send you a pair of panties that they had worn around the UCLA campus all day. Or so that's what the photos and video in their listing stated, when everybody at our office just assumed it was some dude in his mom's basement in Des Moines with a box of underwear he bought in bulk at Victoria's Secret for $3 a piece, took them home, rubbed them in his armpit, and then shipped them out all over the country for $25 with a long handwritten note from his alternate identity, Josie, who just really, really likes spending her days relaxing in the sun with her hot friends or maybe even catching a wave or two. I guess you had to be there. Beyond worn panties and sweaty socks, Naughty Bids sold everything from homemade sex toys to amateur porn shot on VHS tapes because, you know, I'm talking mid-90s. This was VHS. This was before you could burn DVDs. I mean, this was a long time ago, and I'm showing my age. Long before you could stream porn on your cell phone in the handicap stall at work on your break. Not that anyone does that. But yeah, I said handicap stall because, you know, you need the extra elbow room. But, okay, here's we're coming full circle. That's probably why I won't be buying my daughter a Baby Yoda plush off of Etsy this Christmas. She's just going to have to wait till May when Disney finally gets off their ass and starts making stuffed Baby Yodas. And if you find them, you can see them on Amazon right now. But it says back ordered until May because apparently Disney was intelligent enough to pay billions and billions and billions of dollars for Star Wars off of Lucas, but not intelligent enough to spend a couple $100,000 procuring the necessary goods to make Baby Yoda plushes to have them ready for Christmas. Okay. Before we jump ship on this entire topic, let me press on your dear listeners how epic the homemade sex toys on Naughty Bids were. I mean, again, this is like over 20, 25 years ago. Most of it was just like molded dildos in various shapes and sizes, but there was a fair bit that looked more like repurposed dog toys than anything any woman with an IQ in triple digits would ever bring near her goodie bits. Not that anyone with half a brain would ever bring anything homemade and purchased off the internet near their goodie bits. Although, you know, when you really think about it, what you're actually doing when you're engaging in sexual intercourse by either stuffing your most prized possession into someone else's most prized possession or allowing someone to stuff theirs into yours, which whether you're catching or pitching, I guess. I mean, I would never let anyone dog sit my Boston Terrier without proper vetting of their temperament toward dogs, make sure their house is clean, and a complete understanding of how attentive they would actually be to my best little buddy. Yet people still do Tinder hookups with nothing more than, you know, a photo and, hey, how you doing? Meet me in the bathroom. I mean, I would never even let my best friend borrow my motorcycle, yet Tinder hookups are still a thing. Respect your junk, people. That's what I'm trying to say. And then the next time you're in the supermarket, walk down the aisle where they sell dog toys and just think about what I said. You'll never be able to play with your pup using his favorite tug toy or toss him a Kong without thinking about Melissa and Doug selling homemade sex toys on the underground internet in 1997. Ugh. I'm looking at my list here of topics I wanted to go over, and we're just going to segue from dog toys used in the bedroom right into a very beloved holiday animated classic for kids. Okay, this was on my docket for last week's episode, but I ran out of time. With the holiday quickly approaching, I wanted to jump on this before it was too late. I watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer the other night with my daughter. It's a holiday tradition at my house. Every year, the film grows more and more deserving to me, though. I mean, I watched it all through the years with all my kids. I watched it when I was in college. I watched it when I was a kid. It's just been something I do every year. I don't know if it's because I've seen it so many fucking times, but that movie gets worse every year. And by worse, I mean just straight up disturbing and making you feel uncomfortable. And I think it has more to do with the farther we get away from 1964, the more inappropriate it becomes. I mean, it was made in the mid-60s, but it may as well have been made in Berlin in 1940 as part of the Third Reich's propaganda campaign against the West. And that is until the last 5 minutes of this movie when everything is just made wonderful again. Now, if you're lost on which show I'm talking about, it's a stop-action television special about Rudolph running away to the Island of Misfit Toys with Hermie, an elf who just really wants to be a dentist. It was actually made in Japan, but it was voiced over in Canada for broadcast on NBC and the television in the United States in 1964, which is, shit, that's 55 years ago. I suggest you watch it again, but consider the following. And remember, these insights are based on my understanding that this movie was made in 1964, over 55 years ago. Now, if you haven't seen it, none of what I'm about to say is going to make a bit of damn sense to you, so you're going to need to find a copy and watch it. Actually, I'll find you a copy, and I'll put a link to it in the description. There has got to be a copy out there that someone has posted to the internet to be able to watch. So check out the description and follow the link. You have to watch this if you've never seen it before. Just remember, it's 55 years old, and it's something that they still show on broadcast television in the United States every single year. We'll start with Hermie, who is by far and away my favorite character in the whole thing. To the filmmakers, 55 years ago, he's obviously a gay elf with an unhealthy oral fixation based on his stereotypical voice inflection and his desire to be a dentist rather than to make toys. Now, again, before we go too far, remember I'm basing this off of the production year of 1964 and the stereotypes that were created then. He's kicked out of the elf colony because he doesn't want to make toys like the other elves do. He just wants to be a dentist. Again, the entire concept of homosexuality in 1964 is on display here compared to what it is now. Now, Rudolph, the reindeer, himself, are you ready for this? He's a metaphor for being black in 1960s America. Now, here's why. He's the most athletic. He was the first young reindeer to be able to fly. And when Clarice takes a liking to him, what happens? Her father comes over and says, and quote, "No doe of mine is going to be seen with the likes of you." Again, 1964. Not our sentiment now. I'm telling you to reflect on this film as it was being made 55 years ago. Yukon Cornelius, another main character, is apparently a deadbeat dad running from child support payments or maybe even gambling debts and the mob. I mean, the mob was a big thing back then. Whatever the reason, he's traveled all the way to the North Pole in search of silver and gold. Now, the more I watch this show, I feel like there is an undertone of bestiality that's being played out in his interaction between Yukon and Rudolph, Yukon and his dogs, and then Yukon and the Abominable Snowman. And now that I've actually said that out loud, I realize this is like the third time I've talked about bestiality in this episode. So this is a good episode. Okay, speaking of the Abominable Snowman, the Humble Bumble, as Yukon calls him, is political satire for how much we feared and treated mentally handicapped people in the 1960s. Now, don't jump my ass for this. Just watch the show and then think about it. It was 55 years ago when they made it. And just see how sad it really is. Since I'm already way out there right now, let's just go even further. Clarice, who is Rudolph's love interest, was a doe-eyed, well, she was a doe, so obviously she was doe-eyed. She had the big stripper eyelashes and a little come-hither walk that kind of looks like Elsa when she's pissed now and frozen and, you know, she's done, you know, let it go. Basically, she was a reindeer on the verge of her own sexual revolution. And yes, that's exactly how I saw it when I first saw this show when I was probably 5 or 6 years old. Also, consider that her father was worried enough about appearances that he didn't want her seen with Rudolph, but he literally could give a shit less when she wandered off into the blizzard with Rudolph's mom and was about to be eaten by the brain-damaged snow monster. Donner, Rudolph's dad, now that's something you don't hear from the story, or from the children's song, his Donner is Rudolph's dad. He's such an asshole in this. He shows such great shame at his son's deformity that he tries to cover it with black soot at the very beginning of the movie. Apparently, Rudolph's mom had been stepping out on Donner with another red-nosed woodland creature. I'm not even sure what the hell creature has a glowing red nose, or if it's just some weird deformity. Maybe she was with the Abominable Snowman. I don't know. But also, when Santa tells Donner, "You should be ashamed. Too bad, too. He had a nice liftoff." Donner just bows his head and walks off. There's no family pride. The guy is just a giant coward. Donner was the biggest... He was the worst douchebag in the show. Which brings us to Santa Claus. If Donner was despicable, then Santa was a son of a bitch. He was a racist anorexic who hated all nonconformists. When the elves are practicing their song, he acts as if his head is about to explode. Not to mention how rude he was to Rudolph when he found out his nose was glowing. Mrs. Claus, on the other hand, was an enabler who possibly suffered from Munchausen by proxy, which also explains Santa's yo-yoing diet. Now, after Hermie, the dentist elf, and Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, leave, they wander off and find this place called the Island of Misfit Toys. Now, this is where all of the Bohemians were exiled to, and King Moonracer, who was basically the drag king that overran the island, he was kind of the Jack Kerouac of the North Pole. The Misfit Toys themselves were portrayed as being drug-addled, just unintelligent toys. I mean, why didn't Charlie just change his name to Jack? You can't sand your wheels down on the train or just get rid of the jelly and put water in the squirt gun. I mean, I've seen this movie at least 30 times over the years, and I still can't figure out what the fuck was wrong with Dolly. So I'm assuming she's on the island just because of low self-esteem, or maybe her sexual orientation was a problem in 1964. Who knows? I mean, as messed up as all of this is for a children's Christmas special, everything comes full circle and Rudolph is recognized as the savior, leading Santa around the world to save Christmas, and all is right again, thanks to his glowing red nose. I mean, regardless, I'll continue to watch this thing every year, and my level of uncomfort will probably just go up each holiday. And if you haven't watched it, actually, if you've seen it and just haven't seen it in a while, watch it again. If you've never seen it, now you're going to have to watch it just to see what I'm talking about. And again, check the description for the podcast, because I'll find a link to a bootleg copy of it so everybody can see it. It's a tradition for my house this time of year, and hopefully it will become a tradition for you guys too, because I swear to God, it is fucked up. Okay, my wife and daughter have discovered that they can watch YouTube on our TV in the living room, which has prompted them to binge prank compilations, which is something I just can't do. A little known fact about me is that premeditated practical jokes and bullying of any kind literally makes me physically ill. I don't mind someone jumping out and scaring someone, but the movie series like Meet the Parents, for example, makes me want to vomit. There's something about one person getting perpetually fucked over again and again that just unsettles me at my core. I mean, I find it funny. True, I do laugh, but that humor comes at a cost, and that cost comes in the form of vomitus expelliarmus, which is Latin for me barfing my guts up. Or maybe not. I don't even know Latin. The family has been binging these practical joke compilation videos and just giggling their damn heads off. Last week, I walked into the house with a full load in my arms, including my laptop bag, my phone, a backpack, coffee barely held between two fingers as I struggled to get the doorknob turned. So I walk in to see both my wife and my 14-year-old at the table watching me struggle. Then, before I could even get pissed about their lack of help, my 8-year-old daughter jumps out from around the corner of the door and screams, which scares the ever-loving shit out of me. It was like pulling the bottom block out of a Jenga tower. My daughter ends up belly laughing on the kitchen tile. I mean, she was literally ROFL. I didn't realize the reason my son and wife were watching me until after, when I discovered that they had been filming me on his phone. Now, thinking they'd found comedy gold, this is a new occurrence that has been repeated quite often over this last week. Not all of which have been recorded. Some are just for the sick enjoyment of my family. I startle easily. I mean, sue me. On more than one occasion, I've covered the people behind, beside, and in front of me at the movie theater in popcorn when something's happened. The Grudge nearly ruined our living room carpet when I jumped and flipped a cup of Papa John's garlic butter off my plate to launch it across the room. And I had seen The Grudge multiple times. Like I said, I startle easily. Sue me. I'm of the mind that every time my family does this to me, it's literally taking a day or two off of my total lifespan. Their YouTube fetish is quite literally killing me very slowly, but it is in fact killing me. And just when I think it's run its course and I'm a couple of days without a near miss on a heart attack, I'm in the bathroom last night, minding my own business, taking a piss, when the wife walks by and pounds both her fists on the door. Me, with my dick in hand, jumped like I was always going to, and the stream that had been expertly aimed dead center in the bowl went all epileptic and sprayed down the back of the seat, the floor, and then finally the wall to the left of the toilet, like a kid trying to hold on to a fire hose. Not that I'm actually holding a fire hose, but if you want to visualize that, go right ahead. I'm not going to complain. I left the bathroom covered in piss as a protest and then walked out into the hallway to find both my wife and daughter on the floor holding their stomachs, again, literally rolling on the floor laughing. When I told them what happened, they just laughed even harder. Fucking girls are going to kill me. If at any point I just stop posting on social media and YouTube and whatever, it's probably because I'm either getting open heart or I just went straight to the morgue. And yes, before anyone asks in the chat, I did go back in and clean the bathroom, which just added insult to injury, having to clean up my own mess. Speaking of me pissing all over the bathroom, thanks to my wife and daughter living vicariously through my misery, instead of telling a joke this week, which I've been doing each episode, I'm going to tell a story. It's a true story, and it's toilet related. 20 years ago, several of us went out for dinner. There was a fair amount of in drinking included, you know, as you can expect. My wife doesn't drink, and my best friend, Chris, his wife, Jenny, was driving, so she didn't partake in the alcohol consumption either. Now, me and Chris took it upon ourselves to make up for their lack of inebriation with a further escape from our own sobriety in their stead. After dinner, the group kind of, you know, went their own ways. But Chris and I somehow talked our girls into going to play putt-putt golf. Now, at this point, Jenny was on the cusp of exploding already. Chris was just out of control. And the madder Jenny got, the more reckless his behavior became, which resulted in me laughing harder and then him doing more and her getting even more pissed. It was not a good situation. It was more of like a vicious circle that just got worse and worse and worse. At one point, Jenny was bitching about something, and he was walking behind her and said in his worst English accent, "I bequeath thee, Queen Bitch, a lot." And he tapped her on the shoulder with his putter and then attempted to raise it up above her head and tap her on the other shoulder like he was the king and she was being knighted. Except Chris tripped just as the putter was above her head, and he dropped the fucking thing right on top of her skull, which nearly fucking knocked her out. She went down like a rag doll, holding her head and screaming at Chris, which had him even laughing harder. Now, side note is they're divorced now. Go figure. Anyway, we left putt-putt right after that because after being assaulted on Hell 12, Jenny had had enough and she just went to the car to wait for us. She dropped her putter and left. My wife, the voice of reason, talked us into calling the night short, and we went out to the car to meet her, and you know, we left to head back home. The car ride was pretty quiet, you can imagine, until Chris asked Jenny to pull into a gas station so he could take a leak. Probably not the best time to ask your wife when she's plotting your murder as soon as you get home and fall asleep. But she relented because she said she also had to go. Now, this is one of those gas stations that only had one tiny little bathroom with a single toilet, and it was behind the building, and you had to go and see the attendant, and he would give you a key on a big chunk of metal so that you wouldn't lose it. Well, anyway, Chris goes in first, and he's in there forever. The girls get worried that he passed out, so they send me to go check on him. I go up, and just as I'm about to knock on the door, it opens, and Chris comes out with a smile like the Cheshire Cat. I let him go past me, and I start to step in because I need to piss too, because, you know, we were drinking pretty heavy. He laughs and says over his shoulder, "I'd hold it if I were you. I set that room up perfect for Jenny." And then he went back to the car, and I decided to step into the bathroom just to see what the hell he was talking about. I swear to you, I shit you not, not an inch of that room was dry. He never lifted the lid on the toilet. He literally pissed all over the toilet. He soaked the toilet paper so much it was dripping from the rack. He pissed in the sink. He pissed on the wall. It was piss dripping down the mirror. What was worse was the smell. Hot wings and beer hit you like a ton of bricks. The room smelled like Killian's Irish Red dipped in hot chicken. I backed out slowly, went to the car, gagging a little and giggling. And as soon as I got in, she got out to go to the bathroom. Did I mention that they're divorced? I mean, now, not then. And that wasn't why they're divorced, but holy cow. Those were good times. Franco Pop just posted in the live chat that Naughty Bids is still there. He says, "I just checked because I was curious, and it's actually a real website. Holy fucking shit, I need to see this for myself." Oh my god. The website is still around. I swear it went down years ago. This is in fact the same website though, because the logo is the same. I'm looking through the search side of things though, and I'm not finding much. Years ago, there were thousands of listings. You can't look at anything unless you can create an account and log in, which is the way it used to be. I'm not going that far, though. Lots of listings under the gay category. The most active listing on this site right now is Muscle Studs Used Nasty Pig Jockstrap. That's exactly what it says. And it sounds very ominous. Going through here, the only categories that look like they have any items listed beyond gay is figurines. Ugh. I feel so disturbed right now, knowing that this site is still live. Maybe I should swing over to Two Girls, One Cup as a palate cleanser. You know, speaking of Get Offended, I have a t-shirt that has a big QR code on the back that takes you directly to the Two Girls, One Cup video. And yes, we used to sell it on Naughty Bids. We had a Goatsy t-shirt, too, whose QR code took you straight to hello.jpg from GoatSex. Now, if you're lost as to what I'm even talking about right there with this, do not do an internet search to find out what I'm talking about. I think you'd have to be at least 30 years old right now to even have a chance at knowing what I'm talking about between GoatSex and HelloJPEG and Two Girls, One Cup. Ugh. And now, a word from our sponsor. Are you a parent of a toddler that fights their naps? Are you struggling to get them to fall asleep without a screaming fit? Introducing new Night Night Fabric Softener. Just watch your child's blanket and Night Night and lay them down to bed. It's that simple. Our patented hypoallergenic formula contains a wide variety of soothing, all-natural herbal ingredients as well as a 50% mixture of chloroform. So the next time your child refuses a nap, turn out their light and turn out their light with Night Night. Night Night is a wholly owned subsidiary of Baby Be Gone Incorporated. Night Night is not intended for human use, and long-term exposure can result in brain damage or death. Okay, this episode is getting away from me, and I still have a ton of stuff to go over in the world of FIFA Mobile. Before we go too far off into that topic, I want to mention the two Liverpool matches since last week's episode. First, in the Merseyside derby against Everton, Divock Origi showed up and put in two of their five goals. But man of the match was without a doubt Sadio Mane with two assists and a goal of his own in the 45th minute. Winnie and Shaqiri had the other two, and there were no red cards since Adrian was in the goal. Alisson Becker was on the bench. It was a great game, and I was really glad to see Lallana, Shaqiri, and Origi, and Milner with some good playing time. Then Liverpool came up against Bournemouth this past weekend, where Naby Keita played well, but the big standout for me was Mo. Finally, Salah had one goal in the 3-0 victory, but his tenacity throughout the entire match may have earned him a Team of the Week card, which is the real reason I'm bringing any of this up. Based on those last two games, if any of my squad favorites finally earn program cards this week, it's going to be Salah, Mane, or maybe a long shot on Origi, any of which I'd be pumped for. Van Dijk was in last week's Team of the Week, which was crazy exciting for me. Too bad he didn't end up with the Ballon d'Or. Although I'm glad Messi earned it over Ronaldo. Not that I don't like Ronaldo. It's just that I don't like Ronaldo. Okay, he's a fantastic player and probably the hardest working footballer in the world. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But there's something. There's just something about Ronaldo. He's like a pedo priest in Pennsylvania. He just rubs me the wrong way. I mean, I respect the skill and the expertise he has. I just don't care for the man behind the talent. Okay, Thanksgiving. That shit is done and gone now, finally. I only went after Boost, and it was all about Versus, which is fine, but I'd prefer to be able to grind to my heart's content rather than be forced to spend 7,000 of my own gems for all the resets, especially this close to Freeze and eventually Team of the Year. Let's talk about Freeze. At the time of this recording, Freeze isn't out yet. It's close. It's definitely coming this week, but it's still not out yet. In the seasons past, this has been one of my top three favorite events in FIFA Mobile. Team of the Season and Team of the Year making up the other two spots. Freeze is where I've always made my big leaps forward in Team OVR and coins in the bank. Last year, I made about 100 million coins and edged my way into Legendary with 100 OVR soon after Freeze. This year, though, with the season starting about 45 days earlier than the last year's, I hit Legendary weeks ago, and I've cleared well over 100 million coins already. I had over 60 million coins last weekend before I spent it all and jumped from 105 to 109. I'm hoping for something big with Freeze, but it may not have the same excitement it has in the seasons past just because this season began so early. The rewards may not be as spectacular because we've already reached many of the milestones that Freeze made possible in earlier seasons. I really don't know. I'm not sure. I'm still hopeful, but I won't be surprised if it lacks the punch that it's had in FIFA Mobile 17, 18, and 19. Hopefully we'll see something by Wednesday from EA about what to expect in the event, and I'm guessing the event's going to release on Friday. Expect a crash as soon as it releases. People are going to flood the servers. It will be huge. It's the biggest excitement in FIFA Mobile this season since the market went live on September 20th. Last week was the release of Player of the Month for November. Timo Werner at Striker. It's a crazy fast card with good finishing stats, but it's a German Bundesliga player, which means fitting him into an EPL squad is tough. Head-to-head, it's a card worth using, but beyond that, forget it. Werner is low. I think he's under 4 million right now, but I wanted him regardless. I almost missed the chance to play Player of the Month, too. It ended last Saturday at reset for me. I thought I had all weekend before, and then Friday night I happened to check and realized, holy shit, this thing ends in like 10 hours. I rushed through all 30 matches, and it was a struggle, and that's saying it mildly. I had two or three opponents in the 80s, of course. There were maybe five around 95 to 99. The rest, however, were like 102 or higher. About five or six of them were over 108, and then I had a 115 and a 120 in there too. I went 10 for 10, and that's when I saw the 120 OVR. So obviously I was 10 for 11 after that match. I made it to 16 wins with several draws against opponents that were like 106 to 110. Now, no lie, the 30 matches, it was probably closer to 45 for me because of all the draws. It's 16 at matches, or 17 matches, I was 16. 16 wins out of 17. And then I faced off against the 115 OVR and lost, which meant I was at 16 for 18 matches. I figured I'm fine. 12 more matches, I could still lose twice and get Werner. Then I lost the 19th match, and then I lost the 20th match, which was three losses in a row. So I had 16 wins out of 20 matches. I needed 10 more in a row, and that was when I decided to spend all my coins, $60 million. I was done with Thanksgiving, so I no longer needed to maintain that 95-rated squad for that event. I bought UCL Wijnaldum for the UCL event, and then I burned my Team of the Week Wijnaldum in to him, which gave me some additional chemistry, because the new player cards have 19 chemistry, not 17 or 15 or 13. They've all moved to 19, which lets us know that there's something coming with perks. They're going to add more chemistry possibilities with perks, but that's a separate topic. So I also burned my Weghorst base that was trained to 88. I had him in there for World Tour. I moved him into Shaqiri and padded the rest to take Shaqiri all the way to 92. And then the rest of my coins went to upgrading Boost after Europa League and Thanksgiving gave me so many that were eligible. $60 million gone. But with the chemistry upgrades on Wijnaldum, I was able to put in that master Europa League Weghorst. I was talked into buying him during the live stream last Thursday, so I benched my summer showdown of Bamiyang, which I never really cared for anyway. But it ended up I had almost an entirely new team. Now, the last hour of playing this Thanksgiving bullshit was intense. I had a few close calls, but the upgrade made a huge difference, especially against those 106, 107, 108 teams. I did get my 26 wins, but it was way more difficult than I had ever anticipated, or it should have ever been. I think it had to do with me playing in the last 12 hours, and apparently that is not the time to tackle Player of the Month. Now, next month, when in January they released the December Player of the Month, I'm sticking with playing my 30 matches in the first 6 to 12 hours. When going after Kevin De Bruyne last month in the first 12 hours, I felt like the competition I was facing was well below my station. Unlike this week, when playing in the last 12 hours, it was the complete opposite. So remember that. Try to get your turns in early, because late it made it much more difficult. I'll keep Werner around for a while, only because he's such a fast card. I won't be upgrading him or training him or anything, because I'll eventually sell him, but right now his value is just way too low to unload. What else in FIFA Mobile? I finally started working my way through the On Track to Legends campaign in World Tour and the Zidane campaign. Like everyone else, I was stuck on Roma for a while, but everyone and their brother kept flooding in with so much advice on the live streams, Twitch, Twitter, my inbox on all social media, that I couldn't decide which direction to go. The best advice, however, was to buy that Europa League Weghorst Master and just use him as a cross target for headers. That was pretty much the missing key to getting over that hump. And once I beat Roma, everything else just came together all the way up until Bayern. And that's where I'm still sitting currently, but I haven't put a whole lot of time into it yet. Once I figure it out, I'll let you know. I'll put another video out. I also went back to the Zidane campaign, if only to have something to do. Started with the Star Pass Courtois getting released at the beginning of the month. Being a Real Madrid player and his value was going to be so low, while because anybody could just buy him, I figured I'd hold on to him for Zidane 3, where you need a full Real Madrid team. And then all the Serie A players from Moonlight made the Serie A squad possible, so but I had to complete the first leg to be able to use the Serie A squad and had to get rid of all the French players. And then with Player of the Month, including three November Real Madrid players, which I felt obligated to grab, I've now got a Real Madrid squad in the wing, started with Courtois, Modric, Benzema, and Cruz. I believe I'm on the Petit match right now. I'm not sure what I'll do with him once I get him. I mean, obviously I won't play with him, but since he's an icon, I'm not going to use him as XP either. I guess I'll just hold on to him for a while until I have a reason to use him for something. I think that's about it for FIFA Mobile. We're just waiting on Freeze to come out. Oh, wait, I forgot. Tomorrow at Reset, I finally unlock the Market Tax perk. Jesus, there's been so much going on in the world that I completely forgot something I've been counting down for weeks. I mean, with the President of the United States about to get impeached by the House for being a giant Cheeto-dusted douchebag and three Liverpool matches back-to-back-to-back with tomorrow's Champions League matchup against the Red Bulls, I almost forgot about the Market Tax perk. So, yeah. Free Market Tax after tomorrow's Reset. I think that's about it. You know, we're just waiting on Freeze. Checking in on the live chat, Justice1 just asked if I have any investment suggestions for the market right now. And the answer is yes and no. The elite market has already begun to shift upward. It's getting more and more difficult to find elites under 100,000 coins. In fact, finding them under 115,000 coins is almost possible anymore. The prices are starting to move in the right direction, though, and hopefully if you've been stockpiling for the last few weeks, you're going to be able to start selling those. Now it's more about waiting for the right time to unload than it is buying more. Although with the November Team of the Week players coming down for the Player of the Month release, I would highly recommend you consider picking up a few of those Real Madrid players. Is it Modric, Benzema, and Cruz? They're all cheap right now. Those cards will surely go up in value over the next few weeks. They aren't cheap investments, but they should be relatively reliable. As far as the other parts and farming, stick with the 69 rated silvers under 800 coins and the golds under 1200 coins too. That method is still working. It's slow. It is a type of farming and it's very profitable and worth the effort, but it does take a while. Now that I have the market perk unlocked, though, I'll be digging into it even deeper. And over the next couple of weeks, keep an eye on finallysleeps.com because I'll probably live stream some market farming as soon as Freeze is released. That's a good place to end it. Make sure you check out finallysleeps.com for all things FIFA Mobile and whatever else I decide to post. Find me on YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, all under the same name. Finally, he sleeps. Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. As long as you keep listening, I'll keep putting out episodes.